Hello, boys and girls. Welcome to another edition of the Rip City Report. I am Joe Freeman of The Oregonian. He is Casey Holdall of Trailblazers.com.
Hello, hello, everybody.
What's happening, Case?
Oh, nothing much. Just, putting the holidays, or at least the big holiday in the rearview. And
yeah. How was your Christmas?
It was a good Christmas. Yeah. We do most of our stuff New Year or Christmas Eve.
Mm.
As I try to say New Year's and Christmas Eve interchangeably. So we went to my dad and my stepmom's for Christmas Eve dinner. Went to my mom's for dessert, and yesterday just spent the day with my wife and her sister. My sister-in-law, whose birthday it is on Christmas.
Very nice.
Saw a movie, had a big breakfast.
Very nice.
Just hung out, took it easy, went to the lights at PIR, the drive-through light thing, which I had never been to, which was, a nice way to spend some time. And
sounds very romantic.
We were with her sister and her sister's boyfriend.
Well, I guess it's a little less romantic. It's kind of a double.
We weren't drinking in the back seat, though, which, is very high school. Reminiscent. We were trying to think. I guess that would technically be illegal if we were drinking alcohol, but we were not.
You were drinking Coca-Cola's.
Martinelli's cider, finest ciders. I've probably consumed at least like 2 cases of Martinelli's cider.
Yeah, we were talking about this the other day. You were talking about mixing Martinelli's with something nuts, weren't you? Or what was the...
It's not so much nuts, actually, and I got the idea from one of our public relations guys. Martinelli's and Maker's Mark whiskey.
Oh, that was it.
Nice holiday treat.
Very nice.
Yeah.
Very nice. I as well had a lovely holiday season.
I should have asked you.
Yeah,
how was your Christmas and/or
It was terrible. I hated it. No, it was good. We went over to some friends, some dear friends of mine that I've known very long time since junior high, and had Christmas Eve over there, and then hung out at the house. My wife's cousin came down from Tacoma, and we spent the day at the house together. Nice. Started drinking mimosas in the morning, and had a very enjoyable day the rest of the way. Very relaxing.
Yes, that was my goal for this Christmas, and I hurt some feelings a little bit in the process, at least initially.
It's not the first time you've hurt someone's feelings.
No, I try not to do it with family as much as I can because I, as you know, Joe, travel quite a bit, work a lot, and kind of lives defined by our work schedules. So when I have a day off with my wife at the same time, which does not happen very often, Christmas happened to be one of those days, I want to do
get a little you
time with her.
Absolutely.
Exactly. So, and Christmas, you're expected to go to, 4 different events. And I just had to say, I think we're just going to do our own thing this year. And people understand, but the initial
shock,
I don't want to spend time with you on Christmas is not a great conversation to have. And as Joe, you know me well, I'm not always tactful when I say things anyway. So,
I'm not coming
for
Christmas.
When I send a text message hey, I'm not coming. We're not coming. Thanks for the invite, but we're not coming. Thanks. No thanks. It doesn't come off very well, and I need to be more cognizant of that when I'm trying to.
It's all about presentation, Casey.
It's all about
presentation.
And it's really big, especially for the women in my family who just happen to also be the people who are setting up the schedules for things that they want to know a month in advance who's coming and what you're bringing.
Yeah, that's
and
not...
for me, I realized a week before Christmas that, we have a bunch of stuff that we're going to have to do, and I don't think I'm going to have time to do it, so I'm just going to let people know we're not going to do things. And, it's bad enough, I think, for people to hear that, but then to be but it's only a week away from Christmas. Why didn't you tell me that beforehand? My mind doesn't work that way.
Well, that's a pretty big warning, actually. A week, that's
not
a lot of advance.
A week is whoa, hey. There's some people in my family who, if something is 3 days away, it's tomorrow. If something is a week away or 10
yesterday.
Days away, it's the time is always... is transformed or molded to fit whatever the argument happens to be that time. So if you're making the argument that you're not giving me enough time, then a week and 3 days becomes 4 days. I don't. This is probably not different than anyone else's family. But I need to do a better job of letting people know that I'm not going to attend their events. There you go.
And as you said, when we have a day and a couple days of downtime when we don't have to go to a practice or go to a game, or especially if it's around a holiday, You have to do what you need to
do. Yeah, you
got to
stake that time out for
yourself,
the health of yourself, and
indeed,
for the people closest
and
to you.
And your
Trailblazers is obviously getting some time off here as well, which
yes,
playing tonight. Today is Thursday,
right? Yeah, we should let you know. And before we do, we should let you know where you can find our goods, should you choose to read and or watch and or whatever the stuff that we put out. You can access all of Casey's stuff at forwardcenter.net.
Thank you, Joe.
Yeah, and you can give him a follow on Twitter at @cHold, and you can access my stuff and all my fine colleague stuff from the Oregonian Oregon Live at OregonLive.com/Blazers, and you can follow me on Twitter at Blazer Freeman.
I had a quick question about Blazer Freeman.
Yeah, sure.
I've thought about this a couple times.
Yeah,
we did not discuss this in our pre-podcast production meeting, but I just thought I'd throw it out there.
Anyways. Yeah, yeah.
I've always thought I was surprised that you have Blazer in your Twitter handle.
Yeah.
I mean, because obviously you're the Trailblazers beat writer for the Oregonian.
Sure.
So in most respects, it makes sense. But
maybe you should be Oregonian.
Yeah.
For them?
You know, I've noticed that your compatriots over at the O, you know, like Lindsey Schnell for who writes Beavers doesn't have OSU Lindsey Schnell. It's just
true.
Schnell
or, you know,
in fact,
just
I'm not entirely sure what her Twitter handle is.
I don't know.
Jason obviously doesn't have.
Yeah,
but he's,
I actually remember you helping Jason set his up during a game.
I believe I did. Actually, yeah,
I should have had you help me set mine up too.
I mean, I think it works, and I think the most important thing about Twitter handle is it stays consistent.
Yes.
So, like at this point, you definitely would not want to change it.
No.
But I just always had kind of.
Yeah, you know, I don't necessarily know if there was any rhyme or reason to it. I got in. It was a few years ago, and I was just like, I have to do this now, and here's what I'm gonna do.
Well, I guess for me, it's not so much that you had in there. I was always surprised that someone at the paper wasn't like, hey, Joe, why don't you just put Joe Freeman in there?
Well, that stuff's I wouldn't say it's Wild Wild West, but
Then it was. I think you could absolutely say. You probably started your account probably, what, like 3 years ago?
Yeah, it was before the lockout season, so that was 3 seasons ago. Yeah.
So before then it was more just like,
Yeah. It was a new
thing,
yeah,
buddy, so.
And there's not a consistent. I mean, we have rules that we have to follow, and we can't go willy nilly on some of that stuff. But as certainly back then, there wasn't any at least creation rules by what you would create your Twitter handle or anything like that. And so, I didn't know what I was doing.
Yeah. Well, I don't have my full name either, front or first or last name, or a picture of myself or anything to describe where I actually work at in my Twitter handle. So.
Oh. So you're so incognito. It might not even be your Twitter handle.
Exactly. It could be someone else. Yeah. I kept it short because at the time I thought, well, yeah, you only have 140 characters. It makes sense to have a short username so people can mention me all the time. But surprisingly enough, it has not been an issue for people mentioning me.
Hmm.
So.
See, now, and if Joe Freeman wasn't such a common name, maybe I would have done Joe Freeman to begin with. But there's some guy in some foreign country who has tweeted once and has like one follower who's had that name for years.
Yeah.
So at that point, it was pretty much donezo. Yeah. So I don't know why I went to Blazer Freeman, but
it works. I think I have Casey Holdall. I could not tell you what email it's probably registered under. And it's so long anyways.
And
no one's going to spell Holdall right.
That's the other thing. I think Seahold goes well.
Yeah.
Or Chold. I mean, you could go either way.
Because
it
kind of sounds, it's like cold a little bit.
Yeah.
I'm kind of a cold person.
You're ice cold.
Exactly. So it's always worked.
Okay, you guys are here to listen to us talk about the Blazers.
This is fantastic stuff.
We can go ranting for on and on about a billion different things. But it is Thursday, the day after Christmas. It's late morning, and later tonight, the Blazers will host the Los Angeles Clippers in a game that seems like it's been a while since the Blazers have played. And in fact, it has, yeah, especially with this schedule the way it was. The Blazers played, just crammed a ton of games in a short amount of time, and now they've played, what, just once over the last 8 days?
Yeah.
7 days? So this will be their second game in 8 days. That's borderline All-Star break time
off. I think it's actually maybe longer than the All-Star break.
Huh. And as we stand right now, the Blazers are 23-5. They have they own a share of the best record in the NBA with the Indiana Pacers and the Oklahoma City Thunder, who is hot on the Blazers trail in the West. But tonight kind of touches off a really challenging schedule for the Blazers after their time off here. Over the next 6 days, they will host the Los Angeles Clippers. Then they will host the mighty Miami Heat. on Saturday, and then a day off, and we travel to New Orleans, which is a team that over the last 2 years has played the Blazers very well, for a game on the 30th, and then a New Year's Eve tussle in Oklahoma City. So those are four very challenging games, and three very, very challenging games over a six-day stretch.
Yeah, it's this is a tough stretch to end 2013. And I think a good test for this team, and it'll be interesting to see how they respond after having that off time. It seemed like towards, you know, they, like you mentioned, they crammed a lot of games into December. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I wouldn't say they necessarily look tired, but maybe just a little gassed, and maybe they need a bit of a breather, not even just physically, but just, you know,
check out for a bit.
Exactly, you know, just kind of get away from basketball for a minute and kind of get out of that day-to-day grind of practice, game, day off, game, day off, game, day off. So so they come into tonight's game, or Thursday night's game, I should say. I guess I shouldn't date it too much. Against the Clippers, a team that played last night in Golden State, having a they ended up losing that game by 2 on national TV. The only road team that lost, I believe, in the absolutely abhorrent slate of Christmas Day games for the NBA had this year. For those of you complaining that they didn't have better games and saying that they should have some kind of flick scheduled to the NBA so they can
not
swap
happening.
Out which teams are, one, not happening, and two, to hell with you, because I don't want to work on Christmas Day. Find
we
something
would
else
have
to
had
do,
to.
Guys.
Man,
find
I tell you, the first 4 years that we did this, we did have to work Christmas Day, and I hated it.
It's a bummer, man. I'm not even a Christmas guy, but like, it's just... It's hard.
It's something you don't want to do.
Yeah.
You just don't want to do it.
And I get people being like, well, you know, they're millionaires, and, you know, so what, they have to play on Christmas.
I'm not
a
millionaire.
That's true, exactly. We ain't millionaires. And the people taking your tickets, the people that are taking you to your seats, the people running concessions, they ain't millionaires.
Yeah.
And they should get to spend time with their families. And this
I don't know why
year.
Any why we have Christmas Day games at all.
I don't either. I
got to be honest. I didn't watch 1 second of any basketball yesterday, and I was perfectly fine with my life. I didn't need to sit in my couch and watch five games. How many hours is that? 15
yeah,
hours
a, and
of
that
basketball.
That's the other thing too. Like, if you're going to have Christmas Day games, have one or two games. Don't have a quarter or a third of the league playing on Christmas. Like, give them a break, man. Let them be.
I tell you what, though. The NBA loves that mess because when you think back to that lockout season, they wanted to get that schedule in so that they could have the Christmas Day games. And I don't remember if that was – those weren't the season openers, I don't think, but they were darn near close. And was it around Christmas?
Yeah, I think Christmas Day was
that the opener? Yeah. Yeah, it was,
yeah,
wasn't
it? It was like Lakers Heat or something.
Yeah, and they were no joke about that. So the NBA values it. I think they kind of consider it their real estate as far as the sports world goes. So
I don't think they're incorrect about that, but it's just
too
not
much.
Necessary.
It's just too
much. It's not needed. I love basketball, but like, you're not getting your family around the TV on Christmas Day to watch basketball. Like, I'm sorry.
It's more of a background kind of a thing. No.
Guy or what, but, like, it's not something new. I mean, I don't do that with NFL. Like, do the Lions in Green Bay still play on Christmas Day? Is that or
Thanksgiving?
That's Thanksgiving.
Thanksgiving.
Yes.
And I think Thanksgiving's different because you sit around and you eat on Thanksgiving and you hang out and you indulge in some adult beverages should you choose to do that. You eat multiple times a day and you're sitting around kind of relishing in being lazy and fat on that day. And it's different from Christmas where it's geared around gifts and giving. And, you know, so I see having sports on that day. I feel like, at least maybe to me, that's part of Thanksgiving. Whereas Christmas, to me, watching sports isn't necessarily part of my Christmas.
Yeah.
But maybe that makes me un-American. I don't
know. There's not really like Thanksgiving Day shows that you watch.
Yeah.
It's like you have an inordinate amount of viewing options.
Absolutely.
For Christmas. You can watch any number of movies that are Christmas-based that are
Christmas
being played
Vacation.
On Christmas Vacation.
Die Hard.
Die Hard, which I'm not going to get into my whole I don't believe Die Hard is Christmas movie thing anyways, but Gremlins, someone that mentioned the other day, the Gremlins. No one gives respect to Gremlins as a Christmas Day movie. You know, Miracle on 34th Street.
Well, A Christmas
Life,
Story,
blah, blah, blah,
obviously,
blah.
Yeah.
Any of the Charlie Brown specials. We watched the Lady Gaga and Muppets special from 2006 on Netflix.
I don't know if I'd brag about that, but that's
something
different.
It was not very good anyways, actually, and if we had more time, I would get into more about why it's it was completely unnecessary special. But and how Joseph Gordon-Levitt ain't wooing Lady Gaga. He's not going to do
that. Hey, that doesn't sound believable to me.
No, it's exactly. It's like the fat guy sliding down your chimney is already unbelievable enough. Let's not pretend like Joseph Gordon-Levitt is giving 1 second of time to Lady Gaga. Because that dude is, I'm a heterosexual man, but he's handsome. I like Joseph Gordon-Levitt. But anyways,
whole nother issue.
Don't make him play on Christmas, and stop complaining that your favorite team isn't playing on Christmas. Just you should be happy for them. If you really love the Trailblazers, you should be happy that they got the day off
and to spend time with their own families.
Exactly.
And you can watch them today. It's the day after Christmas.
Exactly.
That's better
now
for you. You get two things.
Exactly.
You get to hang out on Christmas with your family or your friends or whatever you choose to do. And then the next day you can watch your beloved Blazers,
which you will tonight on TNT. This is also a stretch. That began with that Pelicans game where I think all of them but one game is on a station other than CSN and W.
Oh, is that right?
That everyone can watch them.
Is the Heat game on ESPN?
I believe the Heat is on ESPN. The Oklahoma City game on
ESPN, probably.
Eve. No, it's at least KGW.
Oh, KGW,
I
see.
It might be ESPN
yeah.
as well. So I don't know. I just saw that it was on a KGW on my listing at least. So those of you who maybe do not have Comcast for one reason or another, a post-Christmas miracle for you.
Congratulations. It's the gift that keeps on giving for at least 3 out of 4 more games.
A few more years.
Speaking of the gifts that keep giving, I don't know why I said that because that isn't really a good transition.
Go, man.
But
go.
Just as we started recording this podcast, the NBA released the second rounds of All-Star balloting. Presented by Sprint, and we have seen a couple Trailblazers players leapfrog higher in the standings, which I was actually a little surprised by. The Blazers are gaining a little bit momentum, even from fans nationally, but to relay that, LaMarcus Aldridge has moved up into 6th place on the front list of front court all-star players, just behind Tim Duncan, who is 5th, Kevin Love, who is 4th, Blake Griffin, Dwight Howard, and Kevin Durant. And he leapfrogged Anthony Davis and Paul Gasol was how he moved up to 6th, so good for L.A. He is at a little over 282,000 votes, and just for some perspective, Tim Duncan is at 312,000 votes. And also in a mild surprise, Damian Lillard has moved up in the backcourt voting for the Western Conference All-Star ballot returns. He's up to 8th with about 106,000 votes, just behind Tony Parker, Russell Westbrook, James Harden, Jeremy Lin, which is ridiculous, Stephen Curry, Chris Paul, and Kobe Bryant. So I think it's quite clear that those are the two Blazers who have the best odds at making the All-Star game. I don't think either of them are going to make it via the fan vote.
No.
Not that it really matters either way, because there's some debate about whether Damian will make it in a crowded backcourt. I see LaMarcus as a shoe-in, but, there's a lot of people complain about the way that All-Star ballot is handled. I personally think the All-Star game is a joke anyway. It's an exhibition game that is all for the fans. It would not exist without the fans. So as far as I'm concerned, they can vote poorly or stupidly or whatever should they choose to. And I don't see any problem with that. I think the onus is on the coaches to then put the deserving players in afterward.
Yeah, for me, we had a running a great question on Trailblazers.com about this a couple weeks ago. And for me, my only issue with fan voting, because you're right, I wouldn't say All-Star Weekend is a joke, but it's a fan spectacle. It's for the fans. Though, one thing I would say, though, is players do take pride in being All-Stars.
Oh, absolutely.
So it's not just about the fans. So in one respect, you would like it to be representative of who the best players are. But again, that's what the coaches are for. Mm-hmm. I think to have the fans choose 10 of the players who are going to participate in All-Star Weekend, and they're all guys who would most likely be All-Stars anyways, I think that's fine.
Yeah.
I do think that they should have some kind of game requirement.
That'd be a good idea.
I think that you should at least have to have played X amount of games to start getting votes, exactly. Because, I mean, Kobe leading everyone but Kevin Durant in the Western Conference, having played like 4 games this year, it's just, I don't think that's good for the league. I mean, like, if the goal is to put out a product that represents the league well and puts on a good show for fans, it's not, you have an opportunity to consume Kobe Bryant almost
enough
you want. Exactly.
Yeah.
Like, it's not good for the game and for the NBA to to have so much kind of notoriety tied up in a few players, especially players who are on the way out. I mean, like, Kobe Bryant, no offense, man, but you're on the downside of your career. And while you're never going to admit it and you're going to say that people are stupid for doubting you, you're getting old, man. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that you're a human being. Like, your skills are going to diminish like everyone else's. And
well, here's the thing about that, though. All the more reason for him, from his perspective, to take that All-Star vote and run with it. Multiple layers. A, it's a pride thing, like you said. Yeah. These guys want to be in the All-Star game. B, I guarantee you this dude's got a six-figure tie-in on his contract that if he makes an All-Star game, he's making six figs for one reason or another. Not to mention all the other hoopla and endorsement things that go on during All-Star weekend. But I agree with you. I think that's a good call. I hadn't thought about that. I think a nice game minimum requirement would alleviate a lot of that stuff.
Before it was a thing, too, where like they printed out paper ballots. So it was like, well, we have to put this guy on the ballot because we're printing these out. They're going out to every single team. So he's got to be on the ballot. Now all the balloting is done digitally through like the 15 ways that you can vote for All-Star online or with your phone or Twitter and however. Yeah, basically every single kind of social media that exists, including social medias in China that we don't even know anything about. Those are the ways you vote now. So like, to me, it makes sense that if you're going to have it all be fan vote, that's fine. You should have to have played 10 games before you can start tallying votes.
Votes, yeah. I like that idea a lot.
That would be something they could actually do that would, I think, it would help out that fan voting. And then people who love Kobe Bryant more than their mother and father can
still vote.
Can vote for him as soon as he gets enough games in.
I'm surprised to see Stephen Curry third in the backcourt. That's pretty impressive I guess it is the Bay Area, which is a large market, but he's a rather, for the general NBA fan, he's a rather obscure player. He plays in the West Coast. You know, the East Coast people aren't up late to watch him. And he was actually snubbed last year, did not make the All-Star game. That's pretty surprising, actually.
He's a bit of a media darling, and he has been for a while. You know, he's a very, he's a son of a player, nice young man. Like, I think he's a very easy player to like.
Yeah.
You know, he shoots.
And the Warriors are easy to like, too.
Exactly.
They play a fun brand of basketball.
He's been one of those guys that, for some reason, like, NBA fan bases have clung to Stephen Curry for one reason or another. I couldn't necessarily tell you why, but they like him, and he's a great player too. I mean, like, I'm making it sound like he's not as good as he actually is, which he is good. But to your point, though, yes, Stephen Curry is not a guy who
you would think would be.
You start rattling off names of NBA players. Yeah, the fact that he is number three, it is a bit surprising, I guess, in some respect. I don't think it's all that surprising because I know how much people like Stephen Curry. And you know he is a guy too that's starting to build his profile a little bit on his own. He's now with Under Armour, which has increased his profile as he's getting featured more often in
commercials and whatnot.
And yeah, getting out from under that Nike thumb where you get no love. So, but yeah, seeing LaMarcus there at number six, as I've mentioned a couple times, yeah, for me, you know, he's not going to be out Kevin Durant. He's not going to be out Dwight Howard. He's not going to be out Blake Griffin. But after those three guys, LaMarcus Aldridge can be somewhere there. And again, it doesn't really matter because the only top three go anyways. But I think if you're a Trailblazer fan, and this might be going a little bit too far into it, but if you don't have a whole lot of impact on what happens with a franchise as a fan.
This is one way you can impact things.
Exactly.
You can vote as often as you want.
You can do that. And it's something that I think we've seen LaMarcus. He's not going to say it a lot, but like there is something about being recognized that I think LaMarcus appreciates. And as he's won the Player of the Week awards, as people have started chanting MVP every now and then, you know, he's noticed that. And I think he has appreciated it.
I thought Monty Williams had something very interesting to say the other day in his pregame meeting with reporters about LaMarcus, and sort of asking Monty pregame about LaMarcus, he talked about, I'm trying to find the quote actually, here it is. Monty said that LA's playing at an MVP level, and then he said he's finally getting the due that he's been waiting for a while. He won't admit it, but that's what he wants, to be seen as an MVP type player. He's finally starting to get that notoriety, something that we've known for a while. So I think what Monty is saying, and this is a guy that was an assistant coach for the Blazers for years, is relaying, is that LaMarcus does want to be viewed as a certain status in the NBA, and it is important to him. And to be basically saying, confirming what you're saying, is that what is going on with him does mean something to him and does mean a lot to him. And I think what you are getting at is that Blazers fans, from your perspective, you should be voting for your dude. Yeah. Like, you have opportunities
you can
to go out and vote for your guys.
By voting for him, and I think he appreciates that. Yeah. You know, when he won the second Player of the Week award, you know, I had mentioned to him that, you know, behind Clyde Drexler now, you've won more of these awards than anyone else. And he was like, I didn't really know that. And I asked him, I was like, do you think that people have to view you now as, you know, one of the best players to ever have played for this franchise? Because, you know, I think it's starting to get to that point.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, he's got enough years in now with the Trailblazers. He's played all 6 years here. And he, you know, he's reached the level now where every couple games he moves up some list, some franchise list, be it points or rebounds or blocks or whatever.
He's like, there's seven or eight categories he's on the franchises all the time.
And so,
yeah.
You know, it's getting to the point where you see his name all over there, and I don't think LaMarcus has ever felt like the fan base has viewed him as one of those guys who is kind of in the pantheon of Trailblazer names that mm-hmm. you think of when you think of Trailblazers. And I think he's getting to the point now where at least from like a statistical perspective, that you have to start considering him that way. And I asked if, you know, do you think that people are starting to see you that way? And he's like, well, I don't know, but with these awards, I think you can make a bigger case that I do fit into that conversation. And, you know, I thought it was a telling thing to say that, you know, he's not out there asking you to vote for him, but I think he would like to be recognized as one of those players.
Well, I think for the first time in not – singularly first time, but for the first extended stretch, both on the court and off the court, he has looked like a guy that belongs in that discussion.
And that's part of it too.
He deserves what he's getting right now. Whereas, you know, the year that he didn't make the All-Star team, when Kevin Love was handpicked by David Stern above him, I actually thought he was worthy of that discussion at that point with Andre Miller, and they had something going, and that was when LA first kind of blew up. And then I think it's been debatable the last couple years how he you know, rated among his peers for that All-Star game. But I think this is the first time where there is absolutely no question that LaMarcus is an All-Star. Now, I believe there's a larger debate regarding Damian.
Absolutely.
And, well, first of all, let's look at his stats going into tonight. He's averaging 21.5 points per game, 5.8 assists per game, and 3.7 rebounds per game. My colleague Mike Taquito kind of broached this subject a few days ago, talking about basically laying out the competition that Damian has for an All-Star spot. And I think you agree with me that a lot of it will hinge on the Kobe Bryant vote and whether or not he's healthy and he can play, because he will be voted as the top vote getter. So he will be in the game by fans. The question is, will he be healthy and will he be able to play?
Yeah, and I can't remember how that works. If it's fan vote, I can't remember if they appoint at that point or if it's just the guy who has the next.
I thought, well, based upon what they did with Kevin Love that one year, I mean, it was Duncan who couldn't play, right? And so then David Stern.
Was that fan vote, though, or was that?
Oh, I don't know. Or was it a coach pick?
Right.
Yeah, I don't know.
I mean, which you wouldn't think it was a coach pick, because you wouldn't think the coach would have picked him if he was injured.
Right.
But maybe it was something at the last minute. And this is Spurs, too, so, I mean, he could have come down with a hangnail and
not played. Yeah.
He didn't need to play. But, yeah, we'll have to look into that a little bit.
But Damian's competition, which Mike Taquito spelled out, these stats aren't updated because this was from a couple days ago, so I won't read the stats. But you're looking at Stephen Curry, you're looking at James Harden, you're looking at Russell Westbrook, you're looking at Chris Paul, Tony Parker, and then from there, Monta Ellis, Kevin Martin, Klay Thompson, Ty Lawson, Goran Dragic. I think the last few names I reeled off there, Damian is clearly ahead of those guys, in part because of his game, but also because the Blazers are so damn good right now. When you have the best record in the NBA, coaches take that into account to the nth degree when they are selecting All-Stars, rightfully so. But when you're looking at the Stephen Currys, the James Hardens, the Russell Westbrooks, the Chris Pauls, the Tony Parkers, those are going to be very difficult it's going to be very difficult for coaches to vote Damian in ahead of those guys. Now, three of these guys, presumably, well, depending upon Kobe, it might just be two, will be included as starters, so you can rule them out. But then it gets down to that second tier, and I think coaches can vote for two guards and then one swing player, or is it two swing players?
Well, I think it's
in addition to two starting five, guards.
So the roster is 12 men, is that correct?
Right.
So five for fan votes, so that means that there's
seven
for the... So I think it's...
Two starting guards, West coaches will vote for two guards, and then... two non-position specific spots.
So they're not even doing the front court, back court for the...
No, I think it's two guards, three front court players, two... Well, but then that would be eight. No, that would be seven.
Yeah.
Two guards, three front court players, two non-position specific spots.
Yeah.
So it's... I mean, it's a little early to be talking about this at some level, but clearly just by the names I read off, you can see how stiff his competition will be.
Yeah. I mean, take Kobe Bryant out of it. And
I think he makes
take
it.
Fan voting out of it.
I think he makes it.
Dame's not going to make it over Chris Paul. He's not going to make it over Stephen Curry. He's not going to make it over James Harden. He's not going to make it over Russell Westbrook.
No.
At that point, Tony Parker, you're probably talking coin flip. I think you probably still give the nod to Parker, but it's close.
He was averaging 17.1 points, 8.1 assists, and shooting 51% from the field, which is ridiculous.
Yeah.
And the Spurs are still third in the West.
And
so
it's the Spurs, too, so everyone just assumes that they're doing it. You know?
Right.
And so they don't get that notoriety. But after that, I think Damian's got a chance. If Kobe doesn't play, I think he's got a puncher's chance at getting in there. If Kobe does play, I don't think he don't make it.
Yeah.
So. But interesting, one other part about that actually Taquito had brought up, coaches as well. The Trailblazers still have the best record in the NBA, and obviously that's a ways off, but if they still have the best record in the NBA, Terry Stotts.
Or I believe the second best record in the NBA, because the Spurs coaches went last year,
exactly.
So
that's
they do not do it 2 years in a row.
Mike Taquito also schooled me to as well. So, Mike Taquito, fantastic job with your All-Star coverage.
There you go, Taquito. Now, he will be covering the game for us, and you will be going to the All-Star game
as well.
So
yeah.
I guess we'll see how this all unfolds, and I'm sure we will readdress this in podcasts to come as we get closer to that date, which
Surely.
Is always in February. So hang tight on that. There hasn't been a lot of drama on this team this season, as they've been one of the biggest stories in the NBA, and there hasn't been a lot of position conversation about who should play and who shouldn't play, but there was a minor storyline involving this last week when Terry Stotts unexpectedly and surprisingly inserted Myers Leonard, the forgotten man from the last year's draft, inserted him into the player rotation ahead of Thomas Robinson, and it served as darn near drama for what this team has gone through, and because it's been so drama-free, as I said. So that was surprising, and it'll be interesting to see how Stotts plays this going forward. What were your thoughts on that, Casey?
You know, initial thought is it's kind of ho-hum. You know, at this point, one, it's only been one game. And two, I mean, you're talking guys who are playing basically around 10 minutes a night. I think if they were playing better, they would probably like to play them a little bit more than 10 minutes a night, whoever it is at that position, that backup power forward or center position, depending on who's in there. But I think it's... You know, you weren't getting a ton out of Thomas Robinson. I think he kind of got those minutes just by virtue of being the new guy and, you know, having some promise. And, you know, he Myers Leonard got minutes last year that he didn't necessarily earn because they wanted to see what they had with him. I feel like that's the way it's been with Thomas Robinson this year, is that, you know, while he hasn't necessarily been bad, he just hasn't distinguished himself at all. Mm-hmm. And so I think you're at the point in the season now where you've given those minutes to Thomas, you know, and it's really only between 5 and, you know, 13 to 15 minutes a game, most time less than that even. And he, you know, like I said, while he hasn't been bad, he's not a very good shooter. I think we can say that. So offensively, and some people have written about this, you know, when you have Thomas Robinson in there, it does kind of shrink the floor a bit for the rest of the guys out there. Putting Myers in gives you a little more... I don't even like saying a little more offense because it's really not much of anything.
Yeah.
But
it's
a guy who can shoot a little bit. You know, I think Thomas is a better rebounder at this point. I think defensively, It's probably about a wash. I don't think either guy's really shown a ton on that end of the floor.
No.
So I think on one hand, it's kind of like a, hey, let's just try this out and see how it goes. I wouldn't all be surprised if Thomas Robinson got those minutes back tonight.
Yeah.
You know, but it makes sense to me because, like I said, I don't feel like either is really proven themselves worthy of
They're
that.
They're both second-year players.
So,
yeah.
Exactly. And so, and I think that, you know, by virtue of being picked fifth, Thomas Robinson has a certain amount of
cachet.
People out there who are like, you should play Thomas Robinson. He was the fifth pick in the draft. And it's like, well, that might be true, but that's not a reason to give a guy minutes once kind of that get-to-know-you period is over, which
yeah.
with Thomas, at this point, a third of the way through his first season, really with the Trailblazers, that get-to-know-you is over now.
Yeah. During the game, I tweeted out something to the effect of, what has Thomas Robinson done that's been so great? Why not give Myers a chance? And I was onslaughted with replies to this from people talking. It was mostly about how bad Myers was the response I got. But a lot of it was talking about what Thomas Robinson had given you guys. And I have to be honest, I haven't seen the great Thomas Robinson that I haven't seen this rebounding machine, this defensive machine, this all-out hustle machine that he's supposed to be. I have not seen that this year, and I remember going on my colleague John Canzano's radio show before the year, and he asked me who was one young guy that I thought was going to blow up and was going to be kind of take that next step this year. And I said Thomas Robinson because I thought that his package, his body, his package of skills, and kind of this third chance, this having been humbled in his rookie year, was going to, you know, convince him of what he needed to do and kind of humble him. And I'll be honest, I haven't seen that. And I kind of feel like I need to be a little bit politically correct with my talking about this. But Terry Stotts, when he came into the year, he said, look, last year we had eight new players. I can't remember the numbers now. It's been so long. But I believe it was five rookies on the team, and there were going to be young guys who played that didn't deserve to play.
Yeah.
That was not going to be the case this year. You were going to have to work your tail off, and you were going to have to earn playing time. I have not seen Thomas Robinson work his tail off, and I have seen Myers Leonard work his tail off. And after a while, when the production doesn't meet the work ethic, you, as yourself, have to say, what have I established this year as a foundation for this team? If I see a guy working his tail off and I see another guy who isn't working as hard, who is not producing, and I think Thomas Robinson's plus or minus is worse on the team. I'm about 1,000% sure about that. What does he have to lose? Why not, after not benching Myers, but after choosing Joel over Myers to begin the season, why not give Myers a chance to see what he can do now that he has been working his tail off for the, 2 months into the season?
Yeah.
So at this point, I can't tell you when Thomas Robinson goes into a game, I can count the seconds down for when he's going to take a long jumper or he is going to sort of step outside of the flow offense and the pass the ball and team first and all that stuff mantra and drive to the hoop unnecessarily in an isolation play. And until Thomas Robinson, and this has been the book on him throughout his year plus in the league, is he gets happy with his offense and he tries to do too much rather than play defense, rebound the ball, and hustle. And I have not seen enough of that to warrant I don't know what the word is, this backing that he has among Blazers fans. And talking to Myers after the last game when he played, I sort of asked him if being sent to the bench and relegated to the bench had lit a fire under him, and he said that it had motivated him. And I have seen him work harder throughout this season than he has in the past. And I'm not saying that he's a better player than Thomas or will be a better player. Nobody knows that at this point, but Thomas Robinson had done enough to warrant making a change at this point. And who knows how long it will last, and who knows how Myers will play. But I certainly don't have any issue with Terry going to this move and at least having this flexibility going forward.
Yeah, I mean, I think it does a couple things for you, or at least I think if you enter into it hoping it does one of a couple things. One, you hope that maybe it lights a fire under Thomas Robinson.
Exactly.
And you know, if nothing else, if Myers doesn't play better than Thomas Robinson does, but it results in Thomas Robinson coming out and playing harder, and it succeeded. You know, and I'm not saying that's necessarily why he's been replaced in those 10 minutes, but you know, it has that effect, at least if you're lucky. Two, you maybe see something out of Myers that you hadn't seen, and you know, Myers hasn't looked particularly great in the minutes that he has gotten.
But he hasn't gotten a lot of minutes.
And he hasn't gotten a lot of minutes, exactly. And so at a certain point, you have to say, well, you know, we're going to put this guy back out there again and see what he can give me. Because you can't – one, this team doesn't practice all that much because they've played a lot of games.
Mm-hmm.
And it's hard to get a sense of how a guy is progressing and what he can give you if just in practice.
Mm-hmm.
So you put him out there for a few games, and if he looks completely lost and like he's a detriment to your team –
You pull him back and you go back. Exactly. It's not.
There's nothing set in stone. And
guys see who works hard. The guys know who works hard. And they see, when they see that and they see a coach make a decision, in their eyes, they see you being rewarded for working hard. And guys don't have a problem with that. And whether or not the move works out, they don't have a problem with Terry making it because a guy is working hard. And it's not like you're benching your sixth man or you're benching one of your starters or you're benching a guy who had frustrated his coach so much that he had played 5 minutes or less in two of the previous four games.
Yeah.
I feel like it's manufactured drama at this point because everything's going so well, and this is Portland,
it's
and you guys
really
pay him.
Even all that well manufactured.
No.
It's just, and I've actually been, and I mentioned this about another story a while ago. I can't remember. I've been heartened by what I've heard from Trailblazer fans about the move, which is little. You know, like people have asked about it for sure, but like I haven't heard a lot of people being like, "Man, they got to get Thomas Robinson back in there. This is Bush League." You know, like it's just been. Okay, you know, because Thomas has had a couple games where he's had an impact.
He has the
Suns game at home that they won. He had an impact on that.
Absolutely,
game.
He's had probably two games where he hasn't. I wouldn't say single-handedly won the game, but done enough to be in the conversation for not just impacting the game, but helping the Blazers win. The
absolutely,
game.
Yeah. But I would say between those, it has been real lean. And, mm-hmm. and you mentioned that Detroit game. I feel like something happened in that Detroit game where he played a stretch. Only played 5 minutes in the first half and didn't play again.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't know if it was one particular thing or if it was something they had been working on that he didn't get, and then they were just like, we got to sit him or what. But it's – I haven't gotten the sense they've been super enamored with what they've been getting out of Thomas, and I think obviously when you see Myers get those minutes, then that kind of leads you to believe, well, yeah, that something is going on here. And it's not a big deal, but like they're trying to find something here. And I think if you look at this team right now and you think to yourself, you know, what does this team need to be able to sustain what they've done now and to maybe even be a better team than anyone thought they could be? And I think they need one more big.
No question.
They need one more guy.
No question.
At either power forward or center.
No
who,
question.
Who can help them. And so far, it hasn't looked like Thomas Robinson is that guy. Now they take a look at Myers Leonard and maybe see if Myers is that guy.
Yeah.
And if neither of them are that guy, then maybe
you go find that guy.
Do something about it. Yeah, exactly.
But no question.
But I think now is when they're kind of maybe starting that process of being like, hey, if this is the team we are, if we are this Trailblazer team that is, you know, top four team in the Western Conference, let's get this lineup shored away so when we go into February and March, when things really get tough, we know what we have, and that's the team that we are. I think that backup center power forward after Joel Freeland, I think that's the one spot still that they're not entirely sure if they can go to war with that, and I think maybe they're trying to figure that out now.
Can you imagine adding a Brandon Bass-like player, not necessarily him, but a guy like him to that second unit, another big, because the Blazers are flush with guards, and what they have going right now scoring-wise with their guards, and defense actually has been okay with their guards, is really good. But you couldn't be more correct, Casey. The one biggest hole, I think, right now with this team is they need more from their backup bigs. And if you could add someone, like I said, like a Brandon Bass-like player, boy, that would make this team that much more scarier. So,
and there might be a guy out there, too, that they can go get. You know,
certainly.
Because there are obviously a lot of teams that are
tanking,
preparing or just preparing for the future. And, you know, even I'm guessing there are probably some teams that thought they might have been better than they actually were this season. And, you know, they might start kind of reconfiguring their expectations or their rosters based off of, you know, knowing that they're maybe not going to make the playoffs this year. So,
maybe you find a backup big that can help you out for a reasonable price, and maybe they go out and do something like that. Or maybe they stick with Thomas Robinson and Myers Leonard, yeah. And maybe one of them comes out and shows them something.
But that's what you have to figure out right now is I mean, you drafted Myers 11th. You've got the fifth pick in Thomas Robinson. You've seen what Thomas can give you through, what are we at, 28 games. Well, now let's see Myers in year two, what he can give you for X amount of games. And as you pointed out, you can always go back to Thomas Robinson. It's essentially the ninth rotation spot that plays anywhere from 5 to 15 minutes. So, yeah, let's carry on.
Yeah.
Shall we carry on?
Let's get to our last topic. You're just talking about minutes, I guess.
Yeah. Oh, right. Exactly. Minutes. It's amazing how often when we go to different cities, how many this subject comes up from opposing writers. And it was a storyline last year that I felt justifiably dominated a lot of the season. In fact, I raised it very early on when I noticed it, and then it kind of lingered throughout the year. The Blazers starters played so many minutes last year. Terry Stotts always jokes when he's asked about it. He mentions the word heavy because I asked him or wrote about heavy minutes so often last year. What you're seeing this year is that the starters are why don't you read the stats? You had them pulled up. The
Trailblazer starters, yes, are leading the league in minutes played together. The starting lineup of Damian Lillard, Wesley Matthews, Nicholas Batum, LaMarcus Aldridge, and Robin Lopez have played 556 minutes together, and that is the most of any other lineup in the NBA this year. But when you look at their per player minutes played, Trailblazers are, last year they were, I think, LaMarcus, Damian, and Nick were all in the top 10 in minutes played.
Damian number one.
Damian ended up the season number one in minutes played. They don't have anyone in the top 10 this year. I think, well, LaMarcus is ninth in actual minutes played. As far as minutes per game
goes,
he's 12th, and that's the highest any Trailblazer is on the list. I think Damian in actual minutes played is something at 19th in the league. So, you know, they're playing minutes, but they're not playing the minutes they were playing last year,
yeah.
Which is maybe why, you know, you're not hearing those calls that you heard last year. But as the season has gone on, now that we've reached this kind of third of the way through, I do feel like you're hearing more and more people saying, well, Trailblazers are still using their starting lineup at a rate higher than other teams. And that is true. But it's not by any kind of crazy amount. And, you know, a lot of times I think, like, people throw out injury stats and saying, you know, there have been studies done that players are X amount more likely to get injured on the second night of back-to-backs or if they're playing four games in five nights and so on and so forth. And I'm sure those studies are true. But those studies are also factoring in, you know, 35-year-old guys that people have on their team or the franchise have on their team still. You know, Trailblazers don't have those guys. You know, like, their starting five is a relatively young starting five with, I mean, I think LaMarcus has been in the league for 6 years now.
This is his seventh year.
This is his seventh season. I think he's the longest tenure.
Or is it his eighth
guys.
Year?
It might be his eighth year, actually. I don't know.
Either way.
Not a lot of guys who have played a ton of minutes in their careers, at least, you know, relative to a lot of other guys.
LaMarcus
out there.
Is in his prime.
Yeah.
Nicholas is, what, 25? He just turned 25, right?
He did.
And we're joking with him about being an old man. But he's 25. Damian is in his second year in the league. Wesley is 26?
Yes, I believe so.
26? Robin Lopez is a young center. Also, you're talking about players who are either young or in their primes. And first of all, they're not being overworked. And second of all, they're not old, aging veterans. This isn't the Brooklyn Nets or the old Boston Celtics of recent
Robin
years.
Robin Lopez is only 25.
25.
I thought he was older than that.
Yeah, see?
Yeah, LaMarcus is at 28 and Darrell Wright at 28 are the two oldest guys on the team.
So, I mean, I don't get this argument. Well, and last year,
Earl Watson and Mo Williams are both in their 30s.
Well, yeah.
Excuse me. Sorry, guys.
Mo Williams is the oldest rotation player, clearly. Last year, I was on this bandwagon as much as anyone else, and I was driving this ship of Terry is playing these guys too much. And obviously, he did it last year out of necessity because the bench was historically bad. This year, he's doing it because it's working, and I don't think he's playing his players too much. And I, like you said, none of these guys are even in the top 10 in minutes per game. So I don't understand why. I guess it's a topic that people can cover nationally when they start to nitpick about the Blazers.
And I think that's what it is. It's more of a and I don't mean this in a negative way at all, and I hope it doesn't come off that way. But
you're so mean.
The idea that I had these projections for in preseason of what I thought teams were going to do. Now I need to figure out why I was wrong with my projection, rather than just being like, "Hey, this is a good team." You know, it's like what I need to figure out that number that tells me, "Well, this is why my projection was right." But these guys are just doing this thing, and it's an anomaly.
They're playing the stars too much.
I think you go to the minutes at this point, and you say, "Well, yeah, they're relying too heavily on their starters," because that's also been kind of like a simmering issue in the NBA with some in some crowds, particularly Henry Abbott at True Hoop has been talking a lot about players' minutes and how there should be fewer games and how guys should play less minutes.
Well, I agree with that. There's way too many games.
I think there's definitely something to be said about that. But I mean, when you're in a season, you got to play to win.
Yeah,
you know? That's bottom line. So I think that there's a notion out there. It's like, let's figure out why it is that these guys are playing better than we thought they were. And first, it was the 3-point shots, but that's kind of normalized itself a bit. Now I think we've moved on to, well, they're playing their starters a whole lot like they did last year. Just to give you a few more numbers here as well. Trailblazers starters are the number one lineup in the league when it comes to minutes. They played 556 minutes together. Number two are the starters for the Timberwolves at 552 minutes. So they've only played four less minutes together than the Trailblazers starters have. They obviously have not won nearly as well much as Trailblazers have, so people don't really care that much about it. And then the third that's kind of in the same realm. I mean, Trailblazers have played significantly more minutes than them. But the third team, close. I guess kind of close. The Pacers. Pacers starting lineup of Paul George, Rory Hibbert, George Hill, Lance Stephenson, and David West have played 489 minutes together.
Where are the Thunder on that list?
Thunder show up. Well, see, the Thunder are, well, let's see here. One, two, they're about 10th. Mm. The reason why is because they sub out Perkins a lot.
I was going to say Perks doesn't play
Perkins
that, yeah.
And Tabo Cephalosha. Those are guys who start for them that get moved out of the starting lineup pretty quickly. So it throws that off a little bit. I'm sure Kevin Durant's probably top two or three in minutes played probably this year.
Sure.
So Trailblazers are not where they were last year. Their starters are still playing more minutes than other teams, but it's not that insane amount that we kind of saw last year. And it seems like a sustainable amount to me. Let's look up, well, 11-12 is a good one because that's lockout, but let's go 12-13 real quick here. Excuse me. So the number one, Trailblazers actually, their starting lineup wasn't number one last year either. It was.
How could it not? Because JJ didn't play a lot sometimes in the second half, but JJ.
Yeah, it was Thunder. And this might also be because of, they might also have playoff minutes in that as well.
Oh, yeah, that's probably what it was.
Well, but
the Blazers starters it was definitely
Pacers,
played the
Pacers
most minutes.
First, or excuse me, Thunder first, Pacers second, Blazers third last year.
So that does probably include playoffs, and it's not. It's probably.
Yeah, because in the Pacers, it must be playoffs because the Pacers are also fourth with the lineup as well in minutes played.
Yeah.
So that's
okay.
Got to be. Playoffs. So,
well, anyway, I guess that's something to monitor going forward. I have heard this bubble, and I've heard it in different cities that we've gone to recently, and I kind of roll my eyes because I don't get why people are asking about that. I mean, I guess it's an interesting stat that they find, and they want to get Terry Stotts' take. But
know from last year is that the Trailblazers played a lot of minutes, and then they come to your town this year. You know, you're thinking, well, they played a lot of minutes. You look at your stats, you're like, oh, they're number one in minutes again.
Yeah.
Hey,
okay.
Issue.
So it's lazy. I mean, it'll be something worth monitoring going forward, but I don't see an issue with this, to be honest with you, and it kind of makes me roll my eyes. So,
yeah, I mean, no, injury, if they're hit with injury, then you never know.
Sure.
You know, that sends it into a tailspin, I think.
Absolutely.
But as far as minutes go, yeah, I agree. I just don't see it as that much of an issue.
No.
They're professional athletes and they're young.
They all want to play.
They want to play too. Yeah, that was the thing of it. After the Timberwolves game that they lost. You know, and they were down by what 30 going into the half, and you know they could have pulled those guys, but there's some guys in particular, Damian in particular, he does not not want to play. He always wants to be out there.
He didn't want to sit in the exhibition season. Yeah, I remember talking to him about it. He's like, I'll play in every game if it were up to me.
And I'm of the opinion that when it comes to injuries, you have to kind of protect your guys a little bit and from themselves from time to time. Though I think for the most part, if a guy wants to play, you should let him play.
Yeah,
they're grown men, you know. And I think the idea that kind of like you have to coddle some of these guys when they want to go, I think there's some issues there that I don't want to get into in a podcast, but some paternal ideas about...
Another day, another time.
Yeah, exactly. But when it comes to a guy who's like, yeah, I want to play because I want to try to win this game, it's hard to tell. Like, I know. I appreciate that thought, but sit down. We're sitting this game out. We're going to tank it. It's like,
and I remember asking Terry about that after that game. Like, did you consider pulling your starters earlier when they were down pretty significantly in the fourth, and he kind of said, well, when?
Yeah.
I said, well, about the 5-4 minute mark, you guys were down, and he said, yeah, actually, I did consider pulling them. But then Damian came down and hit 2 or 3 threes in a row. Maybe it was Nick hit that big three, and then Damian hit one, and then it's kind of like, well, then we're kind of back to single digits.
Yeah.
And so next thing you know, the Blazers... And Terry even acknowledged at that point that it's hard to make that decision to pull the guys, because you're feeling the momentum of the game, and if there's a chance to win it, which there ended up being, and they got it down to 5
they
in
got
that
down
game,
to 4, and then they Damian threw a turnover on an inbounds pass, and that kind of salted it. But
so it's a hard thing to do, and I've always been of the ilk that there's 82 games, and if you're clearly en route to loss, there's nothing wrong with pulling your starters earlier, wave the white flag, and move on, live to fight another day. But I do appreciate the. Certainly with this team, because they have shown an ability to come back from deficits in the past. So, I don't know how we started talking on that tangent, but have you been, do we even have any idea how long this has been so far?
We should probably wrap it up. Here. We're almost to an hour.
Okay. All right. Well, you got a food rec?
Yeah.
This week?
I'll just throw out a couple here. Went to Genoa with my wife for our Christmas holiday meal on Sunday. On Belmont.
Italian,
yeah, prefix. It was fantastic. Oh. It was a little on the pricey side.
Yeah.
A great meal. I had some pasta. It was fantastic.
Oh, very good.
And a lamb tartare, which was
Sounds
great.
A little nuts.
If tartare, I'm a big tartare fan.
Yeah.
I would not have thought myself to be as a young man.
Yeah.
But I really have
grown to like it.
And I don't know if maybe it's because the only places that are really making tartare are fairly decent restaurants. Because, I mean, you know, you're not walking into your local diner and ordering
steak tartare.
Raw meat. Yeah, exactly. So I don't know if that's what it is, but it's like I have yet to have a bad tartare experience, and I'll knock on wood here because I'm assuming
don't
a bad
jinx
tartare
yourself.
Experience would be miserable, but I've not had a bad one, and I can't remember the last time I had a bad tartare, and the lamb tartare at Genoa is fantastic.
I just don't go tartare. I just don't go there.
Yeah, I like it. It's a nice, you know, if you give me a choice of a couple appetizers and there's a tartare on there. And
that's right at the top of your list.
I almost feel like sometimes they craft the menu to almost force your hand on tartare because I think chefs like it.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, sometimes I think they're almost like, well, if you're a person who kind of likes meat, I'm going to give you two options that you're probably not going to like very much and a tartare. Mm-hmm. So you can go ahead and get the stuffed mushrooms or the carrot appetizer that you're serving, which I believe it was a carrot appetizer, but,
or this tartare.
Or you get this tartare.
Hey, what do you think, baller?
Yeah, exactly. You want to try something? You know, crack an egg on it. And this one didn't have the egg either, actually, which I like, because sometimes the egg is a little too much for me.
But, yeah.
Genoa, it was a great meal, fantastic service. Wish we could have done the wine prefix as well, but that was just as expensive as the meal, which I can't do. So we got a ball of Pinot, which was nice. But
nice.
My one mini rant for the day is against urban wineries. I am from...
wine country,
Oregon wine country, and I do not believe that if you're growing none of your own grapes, you're only kind of like a winemaker, in my personal opinion. And so we got one that was from someone here in Portland, and it was fine. It was a nice Pinot. But if you don't have your hands in the dirt, if you're not growing that fruit at all, if you have nothing to do with that process, if you're just getting them shipped here to Portland and then you're putting them in your cask, Casey doesn't give you full on winemaker status.
Nor should you.
No, you're a viniculturist, I guess. But yeah, you don't. I I don't prefer to support those wineries. I want the agriculture.
Good for you.
Exactly. So there's my food recommendation. Genoa, check it out.
All right. I recently went to Firehouse, which is a restaurant on Deakum at the Deakum Triangle. It's called the Firehouse Restaurant. It's actually built, or it was a former firehouse that has been converted into a restaurant. And it is absolutely fantastic. I've been there several times. It's relatively close to where I live. But we went there for a friend's birthday, and there was probably about 10 of us, and we just absolutely crushed it. And it was one of those, they have a ton of, they have a wood-burning oven in which they make pizzas, they make rotisserie chickens, they cook steak. It's fantastic. And their appetizers, their veggie appetizers are all delicious. Matter of fact, we said we want one of each. And we ordered literally every veggie appetizer they had, and they were all fantastic. Their margarita pies are good. I got a steak the other day, and I eat red meat maybe 5 times a year.
That's a shame. It
was delicious, and I was glad that I did eat it, as I do commonly there, actually. It is one of my 5 a year if I do get it. But, yeah, it's on the Deakum Triangle. Very good service, very good food, good people, great atmosphere, and you walk in and you smell that wood-burning oven, and it's a little slice of heaven.
Firehouse is very—it's a very nice, nice,
nice date night.
Yeah, exactly. It's a very good Portland restaurant.
Yeah. Now, a couple tips on this: they do have a good happy hour. So if you want to go a little cheaper, roll in the happy hour. They have a very nice selection of offerings on the happy hour. And but if you don't, you might want to check in on a reservation, because I have gone in there and we've been shut down, and we've been turned away because
and if they're turning away Joe Freeman.
Tell you what,
Blazer beat writer at the Oregonian, then you know that the clientele must be
no joke.
Swingy. Yeah, exactly. I saw David Sarasone at a place one time. Actually,
was he there?
He doesn't work for the paper anymore, actually, does he?
He still does.
Does he?
Yeah.
Anyways, I saw him and the lead singer of Pavement at a restaurant in Belmont once.
But not Firehouse?
No. I don't know why I just mentioned that.
Actually. Yeah, what are you talking about?
I just sunk the end of this podcast.
Okay.
Rats. Because of that, I won't complain about how bad Hobbit 2 Desolation of Smaug is.
Oh, that bad. You saw it.
Man, and after last week, after I pumped
up
the first
comment,
said don't listen to reviewers, they're jerks. You should absolutely listen to reviewers about Hobbit 2, The Desolation of Smaug. It's terrible. Nothing happens. That's my two-word review. Nothing happens.
Period. Don't watch it.
Don't see it. Skip to the third one when I'm assuming stuff happens.
I recently watched a movie, Salinger. It is it's kind of a documentary, I guess, about J.D. Salinger, who wrote Catcher in the Rye, of course.
Overrated.
The book or the movie?
I think the book's overrated, personally.
Yeah, you know,
not by any fault of J.D. Salinger by any stretch, but
I mean, I thought the book was very good. I guess I could see it being overrated just because it's so ballyhooed. It might be like the best-selling book in the world besides the Bible or whatever.
I guess it was subversive for the time too. So it always really kind of changes people's perspective.
Absolutely. But he was, in my opinion, an absolute friggin' whack job. And he has a whole bunch of crazy going on in there. And what happened was the book blew up. And, I mean, I'm not going to go into too great a detail here. But the book blew up, and he kind of became a recluse and moved to New Hampshire and lived out in the woods in a house. And no one ever really saw him. And fans would go to seek him out and go to his house, and they would get into altercations and... The movie kind of starts with a photographer who I believe is from Oregon, believe it or not, who has the assignment from, I want to say it's Time, from some, maybe it's Life, some magazine, and he's supposed to go snap a shot of J.D. Salinger, which has not been snapped in decades. And he kind of goes out and stakes out this post office in which he, I guess Salinger picks up his mail from, and he does end up getting the shot. It's an infamous shot, or infamous? I guess famous shot is what it would be.
Yeah.
But,
yeah,
What I took away is that J.D. Salinger is nuts, and I think a lot of that was shaped because he was in World War II, and he dealt with some heavy, heavy stuff in there, and he sort of never really recovered. That's my own psychoanalysis from watching a two-hour documentary. But the byproduct...
That's expert analysis these days.
Yeah, true. Yeah, no question. he was a recluse and he didn't present himself publicly very often, but he did continue to writing, and he was a maniac. His first wife and child, he would leave the wife. He had this kind of shed out back that he wrote in. He would go lock himself in there for a week at a time and just ignore his daughter and his wife and just write for a week locked in there. But anyway, he continued writing well after the stuff that he produced after Catcher in the Rye and a few of the other short stories that he published. And there allegedly are many manuscripts that are out there that are set to be released sometime over the next 5 to 7 years. So for you literary experts that listen to the podcast, and I'm sure there are many of you,
there's gotta be tons.
Be on the lookout for some of these manuscripts. In fact, I think they're being leaked out a little bit here and there. So that was more than I ever thought I would talk about the movie Salinger. I can't recommend it, I guess, but unless you're really a big Catcher in the Rye fan and you're interested in him, I would say check it out. But otherwise, it was just okay.
Yeah, that's my review of Anchorman 2 as well.
Really?
It probably didn't need to exist, but it was okay.
Well, a lot of people wanted it to exist,
yeah.
And they knew they were going to be making some money off it if it existed, so...
Yeah, get your paper. And the kid who plays Ron Burgundy's son is also an Oregonian, too, I guess.
Oh, yeah?
There
yeah.
we go.
Closer. I tried to go watch American Hustle yesterday, and these movie crowds were bunk. They were whacked out, man. We went to two theaters. Both were insane. Went to the second one, Fox Tower downtown, at 3:15 to try to go to a 4 o'clock show. 4 o'clock show sold out, 5 o'clock show, 8 seats left, and there were more than 8 people in front of us in line, and so we dipped out.
I'm telling you, man, go to Vancouver. I live in North Portland. Fandango always tells me to go to Vancouver, and I avoid it like the plague for reasons I can't really explain. We went to the Vancouver downtown theater, empty. No one there.
That's amazing to me.
You could have seen American Hustle 4 times if you had wanted.
How was the quality of the theater?
It's the theater, sounds good.
Comfortable
Big
seats.
Screen, comfortable
nice screen.
Seats. Yeah, it wasn't. Screens weren't sticky. This is my last anecdote. There was a guy who was looking at his phone during the beginning of the previews.
Ugh.
Well, then you're one of those people in the crowd then, because there were like 4 people yelling at the guy to turn his phone off.
I don't yell at people, but I don't like him. Turn your phone off.
Yeah,
come on.
But it's the previews. And they were like yelling at this dude. And it was like right when that first preview came on, like it couldn't have been 10 seconds into that first preview.
Turn off your phone.
It's like,
they are setting the tone and the precedent for the rest of that movie.
It's the previews. You can do what you want in the previews. People are talking during the previews.
No.
And then
they shouldn't be talking either.
Those same people that were yelling at that dude were talking behind me the whole time. And it's like,
no, that's hypocrite.
Is there any difference between you kvetching the whole time with your dumb friends than this dude looking at his phone during the previews? To heck with you, whoever that was at the Vancouver Cinema Regal 10 downtown, whatever it's called, who was at 3:30 showing of Anchorman 2 last night. To heck with you. And it wasn't my phone, by the way.
If I was in your position sitting behind someone with their damn phone on and in front of someone flapping their damn gums, I would have been pissed.
Well, one, it was Anchorman 2, so people could have been doing their homework on laptops for all I care. You wouldn't have missed anything. But two, it's like I said, I'm a person where it's the preview. Previews for me are still fair game. You can do whatever the heck you want during previews, in my personal opinion.
Yeah, you can stand to be away from your phone for 2.5 hours. When you go in the theater, you can turn it off, particularly when those lights go off and those previews come on. I know that they're previews and they're insignificant, but you do not need to be. You can step away. If you need to use your phone, leave the theater.
I don't know, man. It's previews. It's the preview. It hasn't even happened yet. The real meat hasn't happened. You really need to see the previews for the Coca-Cola Polar Bears movie coming out next year, which, by the way, they're making a movie about the Coca-Cola Polar Bears. The Polar Bears.
No.
They're getting their own movie.
Solid commercials.
Commercials. Exactly. Great commercials. But we've reached the point now where they're so derelict of ideas that they're using commercial ideas now for actual movies. How are they going to turn? I mean, I know what they're going to do. They're going to make some kind of.
Now, remember, there was the Geico Caveman TV show for a while, too. So they've been spinning that junk for a while.
I guess that's true. I guess if the Geico Caveman can get it, the
Polar Bears.
Polar Bears can.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
We're going to wrap this up.
Wrap it up, Simon, from the
Can't thank you guys enough for listening in. We took last week off because we were on the road and we didn't have a way to record. And
we're
going to
remedy that, by the way, too.
Nice.
I got
a fix going on?
I got something in the works for
Outstanding. So. There's a little tease for next week, maybe. And then obviously we didn't want to interrupt people's Christmas on Tuesday, but and Wednesday, but we figured, hey, let's record one afterward. We'll get it out for a couple days, and then we'll do this again next week. So you can read my stuff and my colleague's stuff at OregonLive.com/Blazers. You can follow me on Twitter at Blazer Freeman. You can read Casey Holdall's stuff at ForwardCenter.net and give him a follow on Twitter at CHold. Until next time, I am Joe Freeman, and he is Casey Holdall. We'll talk to you later.
Thanks.
Unbelievable.